Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
His name is Joe. He performs as Jay Gregory, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B. So you're in Seattle with Gregor.
This one was fun because I did not know what to expect from Joe. Pleasant conversations, gone back and forth on Twitter a million times, but I saw him come in for a show on 107.7 The End called Locals Only, and he came in fully painted up. I can't even describe his look because it's so awesome, and I wouldn't do it justice, but he came in fully prepared for that, so I didn't know what I was going to get. What I found was a charming, delightful sweetheart of a man who's making some incredible music and an opportunity for you to attend a show here in Seattle. He's very excited about this this break that he's getting to headline one of our cool venues.
Yeah. Take this opportunity to get more.
To more in here.
More stage.
Performance elements.
Yeah, exactly. Closer to stage ready.
I've taken to. So weird. I've always done this, like skipping squares when you're walking and stuff.
Totally.
I've taken to counting the seconds it takes to fill up the water.
Oh yeah.
Like I know that it's 7 seconds worth of hot water from the machine to make my coffee in the morning.
That's interesting because I'm a barista, so I think about things like that.
It's crazy. I break down life into like smaller segments to understand it better. I just ran and grabbed water, and that's why I'm saying this nonsense. So. Now, are you a Seattle kid?
I am, born and raised.
Wow.
Local.
And the band for the most part also?
For the most part, yeah.
Cool.
Really wild. Yeah, actually, the drummer that we have right now, Davey Brozowski, who's incredible, we like grew up, he was in a band called The Catheters, which was, you know, his band when he was a teenager, and I was in Delure when I was a teenager. So it's funny that, you know, 15 years later, we came and played together.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's fun to have those reference points, you know, and we can talk about Capitol Hill in the 90s and, you know.
What a different game, even from the late 2000s.
Right.
It's like so different all the time.
Yeah.
Is there any space for musicians still there?
Right. To live, I don't know, honestly. I mean.
To create, to live, anything.
Like,
as a musician, where do you have to, in order to afford your lifestyle as a barista musician, where do you have to live?
It's a very interesting question. I was living in Tacoma up until about 2 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And commuting into my barista gig every morning.
Wow. Train or something? Or
I was driving and I would just get up super early to kind of beat the traffic, which was getting up at 4 to, you know.
I can relate.
Because as soon as you get to like 4:45, I-5 is like done.
It switches on. It's crazy,
like, wait,
right?
It's like a matter of a minute. But
how's that possible?
But yeah, so... Anyway, I was living down there to try to, you know, circumvent the rent situation here in Seattle. And then I'm back now in the Central District, just kind of crashing with friends, which, you know.
Central District's the best neighborhood.
Yeah,
it's so interesting. And it's like getting just a little bit of revival. I think it's going to not be as cool in like another couple of years. But right now it's like right at that cultural bubbling point where it feels real good.
Yeah, I've actually worked at the coffee shop that I work at for almost 8 years now in the Central District.
So you've watched it.
Yeah, so it's been really bizarre to see it, you know, and I actually grew up just down 23rd towards Montlake a little bit, and it's been wild, this, you know, 8 years watching it.
Everyone hates that Ike's pot shot, man. It's like a real boiling point.
It is, yeah. You don't want to get me started on that one. Unless you do.
No, that's okay. We'll leave that out. When we were walking down here, you were saying that you just watched one of the 4DX movies or something like that. Now, I've seen a vibrating seat movie before.
Yeah.
This what did you see?
This was intense. It was the new Alien movie.
Ooh.
Which, that's an appropriate response.
Is it like, that's one of those tension movies that I don't do well. I watched an episode of Frasier yesterday where it was too tense for me. Like I can't imagine Alien.
I like your style.
Thank you.
Good man.
But it was, I can only imagine the tension in there.
Right, right.
It's not just rumbling seats anymore.
Right. No, I mean, there's aquatics.
Ooh, gross.
So there was a water feature that you could have, you know, turned on or off on your seat. I had both of mine off, yet was getting sprayed from God knows where.
Yeah, exactly.
So it would mist and then it would spray water. But I don't do well with heights or rides. Yeah. And so they demo the seat like you're going on a roller coaster. And I felt like I was 8 years old, like telling my friend, like, I think I'm going to have to go out in the hall. Like,
yeah, get me out of here.
Like, this isn't going to go well. But it ended up being kind of cool.
That's cool. So you played music in Seattle for your whole life then, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty much since I was 15, we did our first 7-inch Theory Records. It was a wild time. We did it with Aaron Sprinkle, who's done a ton of local records here in Seattle. And from 15 on, been basically just, you know, traveling, touring, gigging, recording.
Cool.
Making coffee.
Up and down, it looks like, just from like snooping around, up and down the West Coast a whole bunch.
Yeah, pretty much. West Coast. Yeah.
It's hard to get away from Seattle.
It is.
Because everything is so far away.
Exactly.
I grew up in New Mexico, and so I can relate to that, where like you're in Albuquerque, and if you want to get to the next city, it's 8 hours away.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's like...
So, are you a... I guess, does Seattle afford you the opportunity to grow your music then if you want to, or is it, what are the difficulties of being here?
It's a great question. I think, you know, the difficulties do revert back to what we're talking about with Capitol Hill and, you know, the cost of living there and
life.
And creating there, you know, a lot of the rehearsal spaces had to augment themselves or close. And
where do people practice these days? I'm sorry to ask a question within a question.
No, it's all good. I mean, Crybaby's still kicking it.
Where's that?
It's on Capitol Hill. That's kind of the last holding on. There's one on 12th that we were rehearsing at. They're just expensive, you know, if you're in the city. We rehearsed down in a warehouse in Georgetown, which we're really fortunate to have access to.
It's been a long time since I've played in a band, and it was like $200 a month for a room about, I don't know, probably like 12 by 12, something like this.
That would be, I would do a backflip for that.
It was also in nowhere, Arizona, so fair. But it's what is a practice space cost a band these days?
I mean, typically you're splitting it with three other bands, so you each have a corner, and each band would probably pay $400. So if you do the math, that's insane.
Yeah.
For a room that's, you know, not much larger than this.
Yeah, our studio's, I don't know, probably about 10 by 12, whatever.
Yeah, it's close.
It's only 150 square feet about.
Which is around there. So it's pretty well. So you put into the fact that you have to pay, you know, the rent from where you're living, then your rehearsal rent, and it's all going up. And it's like, okay, so a lot of musicians are moving south, you know, like I did to Tacoma to try to mitigate it. And
wow.
It's just wild.
Is there any affordability in Tacoma? I know a lot of people from Seattle are moving to Everett and Tacoma right now, but
right.
I mean, is it even affordable down there?
It is. I mean, if you're looking to buy, definitely, it's like,
But how about as a band?
But as a band, yeah. I mean, you could definitely get a super killer, you know, Victorian house in a good neighborhood, like, well under what you would pay here. I mean, it could be reasonable.
And like, maybe try and practice there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, everybody pays $500 for a room, and then you rehearse in the basement. I mean, I've lived in houses like that, and that used to be a thing here in Seattle, but not anymore. Within the city.
So how do you navigate, I guess, the getting older fighting to make it worth it versus the pressures of like, I got to live in another house with five people.
Yeah,
I got to couch surf to make it work. Like,
yeah, exactly.
How does that weigh on you?
It's a heavy burden. It is. Like, I mean, you don't have, you know, structure often or, you know, stability in the traditional senses. But at the same time, you do have this freedom and this ability to to follow your dreams and, you know, create your art and your passion and, you know, satiate yourself that way. So it's a trade-off. But I think the real problem with artists getting moved out of the city is that they become less concentrated and then it's harder to share ideas. And yeah, we can do it on the internet and all those things, but there's something to be said for getting in a room with people and playing music together.
Yeah.
Sharing ideas and talking, you know, face to face.
Well, if you want to have a cool job in Seattle and you work in Tacoma or you live in Tacoma, that's tough.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
How long do you keep a drummer that doesn't want to do that after a while?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the thing too, is that you've got four other people's lives and schedules. And
as you get older, are you finding that other people can't hang?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely weeds out the, the partiers and the actual people that love music.
It must be interesting to watch, I guess, over time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I try to just focus on what we're doing and and not let, you know, too much of what's going on around us dictate where we're going.
Yeah.
And so far, that's been good for us.
How about that Upstream Music Festival?
We had a great time at that.
Now, what started this whole thing off is that I see you on the internet all the time, and that's fun. But Stephen Graham spoke so highly of you. That's actually not even fair. Let's back this up even a little more. You came on Locals Only, and here you are, shirt off, pink arm, makeup on, like full on.
Yeah.
And it's such an image.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, who is this guy? This guy's got a screw loose.
Right?
I love it.
A couple.
Yeah. And then Stephen Graham, the host of Locals Only on 107.7 The End, he spoke so highly of your performance at Upstream.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So I'm glad that we could make this all work out.
Totally,
but I'm curious to see what you thought of Upstream, because I've heard various different opinions, but as I haven't really talked to any artists that played it. How did you feel about that?
I honestly thought it was a huge success. I thought it was super cool for the community. And like, to piggyback on what our last conversation was, it's like, you need to get people together. You need to get artists and musicians together.
Yeah.
And, you know, they really did a great job. They took care of bands, local bands. They paid us really well for, you know, being local artists without big draws.
Yeah.
And they treated everyone really well, professionally. You know, it was really cool to be in Pioneer Square and have these non-traditional venues be incorporated. So, you know, the city is actually seeing inside the city and actually getting to go see historic Pioneer Square. And
yeah, because when I think of Pioneer Square right now, I think of it smelling kind of like pee a little
bit. Right, exactly.
And then about like a lot of people that have like drug problems and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like not necessarily a pretty picture.
No, definitely. Exactly.
So it seemed really rad to have to have a different presence there to like something around art.
Totally. And to invigorate that area and, you know, make
you think
it.
You think it's got a future?
I do. I honestly do. I feel really excited about it. I know there's, I mean, for a first year festival, I think they killed it. I mean, it was really well
done. Shout out to Paul Allen.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Seriously. I mean, whoever, you know, Paul and his team, they did such a good job.
Just to throw a little money at something too, to make it, to spotlight a part of the city like that.
Totally. And I mean, that really, you know, if you think about 15 and 16 year olds right now that are in high school going, oh my gosh, Upstream Music, maybe we could do that. And then they're putting their demo together and then they're getting excited about that being a goal for them. And that's how, you know, young bands get together and get excited and get better.
On the flip side though, how about how Pioneer Square used to be a place that music happened? It was
kind of... Velvet Elvis was my favorite venue that it was right there next to Base Northwest.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it was a
spark like your like a childhood memory of
there? I mean, I have like very strong memories. Like as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah. But you know, that was a little theater. It was all ages. It was in the heart of Seattle. You know, it was a beautiful setting. And so, you know, I played that as a 17-year-old, and that really like helped, you know, embed this like deep love of my city and playing music in it. And so for me, Upstream really like brought that back home to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was walking out of our set basically after I sang the last song, and it was this surreal moment kind of walking on those brick streets and the trees and thinking, wow, like, you know, 15 years ago I was this little kid playing in this theater and
here we are again.
Yeah, and here we are now, and it's so cool.
Now, before Upstream, you seem like a pretty positive guy, so maybe this question won't get the depth that I'm looking for, but like...
Oh, I can get deep.
How did you feel, like, that was a real eye-opening thing. There were so many cool local bands that got together, and like, I see a lot of names pop up and come and go and stuff, but to see that many at one time.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the local music scene, though, before Upstream kind of put everyone together? What was the health of the local Seattle scene?
It's interesting. That's a good question, because I think, you know, you have your little sections of the scene, and Upstream, I think, did a really good job of organizing them so you could see them. So now that I've seen what the stages were and how those bands went together, it's like, oh yeah, that's that scene and that's that scene.
Oh, interesting.
And so now I actually, in retrospect, can say the scene is really strong. Like, it's stronger than I thought it was.
That's how I was feeling about it too, seeing all this stuff, to be like, I just a couple names at a time.
Yeah.
And I know that there's that kind of like a cool, like, women fronted kind of like surf rock thing that we have here, which is very, very strange for where we're at,
but totally,
also it's rad and fun. Yeah. But like, I guess I don't see enough of it. I don't invest enough time into it either. So it's probably my own fault, but to really think like, wow, there's a really vibrant scene until we see that.
Yeah, totally.
Do you feel like you have a piece of that scene?
Ah, that's a tough one for me, because I always feel like an outsider. So I get a lot of work done alone, and you know, I am kind of an introspective person.
Cool.
When I'm not, you know, out in public.
How does that challenge, or how does that make it more or less challenging for you to be an artist in a scene like that, if you prefer to be?
Yeah, it is really hard, because honestly, I have, you know, depression and anxiety issues that make even things like this hard. And, you know,
you're doing great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. but you know, a lot of being in a band isn't playing your guitar in your room like it started for me. It's being social and, you know, playing for other people. And so it's something that I work on daily with, you know, getting over those kind of fears and social fear based stuff.
It's weird though, right? It's like, it sucks to even just to walk into a new environment, there's a bunch of people you don't know.
Yeah.
It's like really easy to be like, never mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Bye.
Like, actually, I left something in the car.
Yeah, exactly. And then hide out until you see someone you know.
Yeah,
and then like,
right,
okay.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting, because I've been around several pretty famous musicians, and you think they're these like larger than life characters that are just so outgoing and excited, and they're nervous, they're scared, they're like anybody else, you know?
Okay, so, well, then that's interesting, because how does that inform your choices that you make on stage then? Mm. Do you feel like a totally different person when you get up there and it's now spotlights are on and it's go for it?
It's interesting. I transport to a different universe. It's weird. I don't know when that click happens, but there's some moment right when I get on stage that I leave this planet.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's weird, because I won't really, I mean, I'm in the music very deeply, so I know that world and that landscape very well, but if I look at things like pictures or video later, I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, I didn't see any of that. Like,
oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and like people in the crowd, they're like, you know, I've had friends say like, oh my gosh, you were staring at me the whole time. I was like, I did not even know that was you. Like, you know, someone I know really well. Like,
that's a weird thing. Like, even just from, I have very little on stage performance experience, but even just going up and being like, hi everybody, here's the band.
Totally.
The spotlights that are on you, you don't see anything.
Yeah. It's really,
maybe a couple kids in the front or whatever, but other than like, that, it's like, also
no face recognition.
And also those spotlights are a lifesaver, because they're performing to a crowd
exactly.
as a whole,
not
as like,
exactly.
like there's Aunt Susie or whatever. Like,
exactly.
Okay. So then beyond that, not just turning into a alien on stage and going
totally.
For it, letting the music fly around.
Yeah.
What are your choices and your decisions to make when it comes to your image on stage? How do you like cultivate that?
Yeah, it's interesting. It did kind of start from concepts that we're talking about with, so the first time I ever worked in a major recording studio, it was the Hearse in Berkeley, California, with Mark Needham and Jeff Saltzman. And
what have they done?
They have done The Killers and Dolly Parton and just huge records. But The Killers and I were in there doing our demos. Theirs for Hot Fuss and mine for the record that got me signed to Geffen.
Wow.
And
what record was that?
It never came out.
Oh.
It was a long, arduous battle.
Okay, we'll finish that first thought. We'll get back to that.
But, so I was a big drinker back then in those days, and that was how I tried to cope with my anxiety and, you know, all that stuff.
Not surprising.
Yep. And so I was in this studio, and the session was going really well, and I was kind of new to singing. I've never been trained. I've never taken a lesson. So it was like, I was a little getting my legs underneath me, you know? And I was just nervous as I've ever been in my entire life. I was shaking, and I couldn't drink enough Jack Daniels to steady my hand. And so I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I ended up just taking all my clothes off and was like, if I'm nervous about being naked, maybe I won't be nervous about singing, and maybe my voice will sound good. And it worked, and we got the demos got assigned to Geffen. And so fast forward to Jay Gregory, and I have recently become sober when I started the project.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. 3.5 years now.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. Thank you. And so this show that we were going to play December 2015 at the Crocodile was the first time in my entire life that I was going to perform without alcohol. And I was like having those panic moments of like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And so I was like thinking about, okay, well, what can I do on stage to help root me and ground me and bring it back to reality? And so I thought about that experience with Mark Needham in the studio and how that, you know, calmed me down. And so I thought, okay, if I rip off a pant leg, that's a little bit closer. And if I don't have my shirt on, that's a little bit closer. And then if I have these burlesque, boylesque statues with me that were all painted basically naked, you know, that would calm me. And so anyway, that show went off just smashingly. And it was such an amazing feeling to have done it sober and to have had such a warm reception, and just the vibe backstage after the show was as good as it's ever been.
What positive reinforcement is that?
What a great feeling.
It really was.
And I didn't know, honestly, before that, I didn't know if I could ever do that again. I was at the point of like, I don't know that I can ever tour or play, because I could only do that with alcohol, I thought, you know? So after that show, it was just like a game changer for me.
It must be so difficult, because music and alcohol are like the places where music is usually performed, is places where alcohol is served.
Totally, and I'm all for it. I mean, I'd be the first person to pour my bandmates shots and load them up, but for me, it just didn't work. But
now, you'll have to forgive me. I shouldn't lead like that, but I always assumed, hearing your music, I go, God, there's some, it's really cool pop music.
Totally, yeah.
But I'm like, there is some, it's been touched a little bit by a different time period. It does feel like The Killers a little bit. I mean, there's all different, I hear War on Drugs in there. This is a game I don't like playing.
There's a reference point here, though, because Mark Needham, who mixed Hot Fuss, mixed our two singles that we're working next.
Yeah, okay, so that it feels that
so
way.
So there is that element in there.
But as soon as I started thinking that way, I was like, find something more. So it's not just like, that sounds like The Killers.
Yeah.
But also, there's the War on Drugs I hear there. Yep. I even hear a little U2 in there.
Yeah, totally. And Spotify says that. What do they know?
Who else do you think shapes your sound?
It's interesting because, you know, most of what I listen to at home is like Bobby Womack and Aretha Franklin and just like 60s Marvin Gaye. Like, that's just, I'll always have that on, you know. But I think that my influences musically come more from like the Eurythmics, The Cure, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate was a big one for me.
Were you watching them or playing it beside them, maybe?
Jeremy Enoch for the thing. No, I had to do an interview, so I couldn't watch it. He did the whole Frog Queen record, I think. But we get a lot, like the New Order.
Terrible timing on that.
Yeah, right. I know, seriously. but I get Peter Gabriel a lot with my voice. And so there's a lot of that like darker 80s synth stuff, I think, that comes through.
That's fun, though.
Yeah, which I love. I mean, I love all that stuff.
It's cool because, that darkness, it's like, because it feels really good. Listening to your music feels really good.
Yeah.
But also, there's like just a little dark streak through it.
Totally. I think it's true to be, I mean, a lot of the songs deal with my alcoholism and depression and anxiety, you know, so there's these kind of gnarlier weights at the bottom of the songs that kind of, you know, or where they from. But I think as you're maybe seeing now with my personality, like, there's also that tone of like optimism and and so I think that does come through in the music.
It's really uplifting.
Yeah, there is that uplifting tone to it.
It feels really good to, like, it makes me feel good to listen to your music.
I love that.
Like, I guess kind of like a, rather than just being like, this is boring.
Yeah.
Like, right, or no, whatever.
Huge, yeah.
I'm discovering this as I'm telling you this. Like, yeah. I'm like, so forgive me if I'm fumbling over it a little bit, but it's like, it does feel good to listen to the yeah. We should talk about, actually, specifically, I want to make sure I get this right.
Yeah.
I'm practicing my cursive, so I wrote it in cursive.
Nice. It's a fancy journal.
Thank you. A 9-song EP, is that correct?
Indeed.
Called Gold Teeth and Glass Eyes. The two big songs that you're working on for Airplay and whatnot are Cave Birds and E-Flower.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I'm proud of myself for this. Okay, interview over. I did my part.
He dropped the mic, people.
But they do inspire me to feel good. What's the reaction like when you're performing? How are people responding to this music?
It's interesting. The live show is really intense. Like I said, I'm in a different world, and so when I see pictures again, it's like, wow, I'm so intense and I'm so, pensive and thoughtful. And a lot of the songs can choke me up. And so a lot of what I get feedback wise is blown away, not by much other than like just the impact of it. Like, whoa, like I took them somewhere, kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, as an artist, is that the goal?
I mean, it is. So it's weird. That's why I was kind of like, carefully choosing my words, I'm like, I don't want to overstate this, but that's really been the response.
Do you, it's probably a combination, but what do you feel like your music does for you more? Serves as a way to move others or to solve your own riddles and problems?
That's a great question. I mean, because, yeah. I think it's probably both, because and there's an element of, the songs teach me stuff later after I've written them. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's totally where I was at in my life at that time. And I didn't even see it. I wasn't there,
Oh, wow.
but at the same time, like it has always been something that meant a lot to me to like make other people feel good. And I know for me, music was a savior, and it, made me feel good in real times of darkness. And so I always thought like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to be, someone that can offer that to the world. And so there's a big element of that.
Do you ever feel like you go for something and you're not ready for it and it has an effect on you then, like whether it's performance or from trying to write, or is there a line for you inside of yourself that you still haven't crossed?
Interesting. Is there a line for me? I mean, I don't have a lot of lines. I think there's a lot left to do. I mean, I was talking about this with our publicist earlier, and we're getting so excited about this tour that's coming up and this show at the Crocodile that'll be our first headlining show in Seattle. And the band is just coalescing right now in such a huge way, and we're so excited about the record. And so when I think about taking it out on the tour, I'm just like, I can't wait to do this every night and to get bigger and better. And so we were talking about how once we can get to a little bit bigger stages and we can do a little bit more production, I have all these like seemingly crazy ideas.
Cool.
for stage design and like show concepts and stuff, but I'm super excited about them, and I can't wait to actually bring those into, life and flesh.
So I guess what I was getting at is like, you're dealing with being in recovery for now for 3.5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, do you have to like tiptoe around anything? Do you feel like there's any like still a raw nerve that you haven't tackled yet inside of you?
No. I mean, I'm doing a lot of self work.
And through the music. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't feel like I have it figured out by any means, but, man, alcohol just like totally ruined my life in so many ways. So at this point, it is like a fire that I don't want to touch. Like, it's...
Well, it's really interesting because you seem very... you've come to terms with it, which is a refreshing thing for somebody who is... to talk to somebody who is so obviously affected by it, but also understands that. That's nice. And I don't know if you have to like still like... if you're still battling it internally, because externally you're projecting like that you're happy that you made the choice that you did.
Totally, yeah. And I don't go to AA or do any of that. I do therapy and yoga and meditation, and like have a bunch of like self-care mindfulness stuff going on. But for me, it's just like I was hitting my head against the wall so many times. I'm like, why am I doing? I got to stop doing this. So
that's incredible to be able to understand that you need to change and then be able to actually do it are two very difficult steps.
And I'm making the story brief, but it wasn't as simple as that. But ultimately, that is like the final step was I just had to say it's nobody else's problem but mine, and I got to do something about it.
That's amazing. Yeah. Great job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
Thank
really
you.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
I guess, what do you, you say you see a bigger stage for yourself. You see some fun production that goes on.
Yeah.
How long have you worked on what you're messing with now?
Yep. It's been evolving, and right now we really hit our stride. We just flew back to New York and did this big photo shoot, video shoot for Refinery 29, which is this amazing fashion culture blog.
Cool.
But that was kind of like, okay, we came to the where we're at now with the stage look. But it's been about an 8-month process of us, like me and my makeup artist, John Barber, we've kind of been trying to take it to a deeper level. He's, you know, I want him to know what these songs are about, where they're from on a deep level. And so we've kind of like together through that and those conversations kind of developed this look and what it feels like.
Cool.
And so it, to me, that like when, and it was so interesting when we did this shoot in New York, it went so well. It was so exciting. And as soon as like they took the makeup off, I just instantly switched character, like back to this, like how you're seeing me now. But before I was very professional, very serious for the shoot. And all the people shooting it were like, that was so amazing. As soon as he touched your face with the makeup, you went into character.
Cool.
And then as soon as it was off, you were off. And it was interesting to think of that. And so that just made me think of what you were talking about earlier with, you know, leaving the stage and going to a different universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's fantastic to be able to get to perform like that. Do you have any other performance experience? Have you done any other stage things?
No, I mean, I won't even sing karaoke. I don't sing at birthday
parties. You have a
lovely
voice. It's like, I'd like to pay you that compliment because maybe you'll be able to use that as a little bit of karaoke in the future or something.
Exactly.
Where does that come from? How do you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, I did teach myself how to sing by literally pressing the piano on the lowest note that I could, you know, and then chromatically go up as far as I could and hold my breath. And
are you trained as a musician at all, or did you figure it out on your
self-taught on all the instruments? I mean, I play guitar, bass, piano, upright bass, but I learned, you know, saxophone in school, but outside of that, everything's self-taught. But
where'd you grow up around here?
Kind of in the Montlake area.
That's cool. What high school did you go to? If you don't want to say, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah, I'd rather pass.
Pass. That's awesome. Okay, so you're performing at the Crocodile.
Yeah.
What's the date on that?
It's June 24th, which is Saturday.
June 24th. Oh, that means it's actually a show I could even go to.
Yeah,
perhaps.
You should be there.
Okay, cool. So June 24th at the Crocodile.
Which this is like a dream come true for me show.
Of course. I mean, with the history of that place and then to be able to, I'm sure you've seen a million shows there as well.
Totally. And it's the first time we'll ever be headlining. I'll ever have headlined the Crocodile, which...
Will you do anything special for it? Do you have any...
I've got a couple, like, really aggressive ideas. But it'll be a blowout for sure. Oh, and it's Pride weekend, too, so it's going to be just, like, a total, like, crazy weekend. And,
The best.
It's going to be super fun.
Okay, so the Crocodile on the 24th. And then also, I think this is public, but you're doing a little tour up the West Coast whatever, and you'll play in Bellingham also if people want another chance there, LA, and all the way. But also then this fall, or just before fall happens, you're going to play at Bumbershoot.
Yeah,
Bumbershoot's a different beast than it used to be.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about going to this like kind of new and like bigger Bumbershoot music experience?
It's so interesting. Bumbershoot was the first concert I ever attended as a kid.
Like probably for free or for like $10.
It was
$7.
Like 1996.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, Foo Fighters and Beck and all these like huge artists of the time for $7.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, the spirit of it then, it's hard from a 14 and 15 year old's reference. It was like Mecca. It was like the greatest experience of my life, you know? And then you get older and you're more concerned about where's the, you know, beer garden and where's this and that, and it gets more stressful. But it's such a cool event, and it's so cool that it happens in Labor Day in Seattle. And it really is like just in my mind, such an epic nostalgic event for me. So when we got the offer sheet, I literally cried. I was like, this, I can't believe we're playing Bumbershoot.
Things are really coming together for you.
Yeah, they are.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're so excited.
Does it feel like all the hard work you've put into it is starting to pay some dividends?
It is. And it's just, having the response of the audience be so overwhelming and kind, and that is just like so validating for the hard work, you know, because I mean, I work probably 16 hour days and
half spent making coffees and half
six hours at coffee and 10 on music. I mean, it's every day there's so much to be done, booking tours and setting up rehearsals and writing new songs. And
yeah, it's a whole business.
It's a full on business. Yeah.
And I think lots of people head towards it as artists that don't understand how to tackle that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've learned your lessons over the years of how to do that.
The hard way.
Exactly. Such, yeah. Seems like all musicians that are still going at it after they've turned 30 are learning the hard way.
Yeah, we're a weathered group.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, yeah. Jay Gregory, good God. Joe and the group Jay Gregory performing for the June 24th at the Crocodile.
Yeah.
That's a big, fun time.
It's going to be awesome.
Man, thank you so much for coming and
talking. Thank you, man.
It's super cool to
My
be able
pleasure.
To sit down. You're such a character, and then to just see you as just such a nice human being is really fun. So,
thank you.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at HeyGregor. Find more episodes online at SoYou'reInSeattle.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Chowder.